I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, the game changer in radio, print, and digital media programming. We are a roundtable talk show where information, resources, and referrals are provided intentionally every Saturday to empower our military population on WVON 1690 AM, the iHeart Radio app from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please visit our website at www.americashg.org.
The views expressed on our programs are not necessarily those of WVON, Midway Broadcasting Corporation, or our participating sponsors.
Live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON.
We're your original social media.
You're listening to American Heroes, hosted by Cliff Kelly on WVON AM 1690.
Welcome to America's Heroes Group. We are here and we are proudly sponsored by attorney Steve Seidman of Seidman, Margulis & Fearman, LLP, 20 South Clark Street, 2 First National Plaza, Suite 700, Chicago, Illinois, 60603, toll-free number 888-837-3275, office 312-781-1977. Also, Pearl's Place, Down Home Southern Cooking, 3901 South Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, phone 877-275-5852. We also have a proudly sponsored by Veterans Business Owner, Harris Gulf Shrimp, 7448 South Vincennes Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60621. Call 773-783-1818. Okay, today is Saturday, July 11th, 2020, and we are here with our America's Heroes Group roundtable with partner Jesse Brown, VA Works. Our host is Cliff Kelly. I am the co-host, Dr. Damon Arnold, a colonel retired from the military army, executive producer Glenda Smith, digital media producer Manny Corazari, and also assistant media producer Titus Williams are in attendance. Saturday's topics today are going to include panelists who are calling in. The first is Shonda Johnson, a U.S. Army veteran, and Jesse Brown, VA public affairs officer. Also, we have Dr. James Brunner, associate chief of staff for clinical affairs at Jesse Brown, VA. And we have Dr. Brendan Stedman, chief of emergency medicine for emergency department, Fast Track, and COVID-19 tent operated since March of this year. He is also a veteran, and he is also on call for the emergency department, so we will respect his time. Discussion today will be talking about returning to normalcy and emergency room services in the face of the COVID-19. Welcome, panelists. Hello, Chandra. Hello, Brendan, and also hello, James. How are you?
Good, sir. Hello. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, great.
Likewise. Yeah, we're doing well. Thanks for having us.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, yeah, thank you so much, and thank you for your service as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. you know, I wanted to start it off with you, Chandra, just to tell us a little about the public affairs officer and then sort of set the stage for talking to Dr. Brunner and also Dr. Stedman.
Okay, so we all know how COVID has sent our world into a tailspin. Everyone has had to quickly adjust to a new norm. So at Jesse Brown, a lot of our appointments were moved to virtual care through telehealth and VA Videos Connect, actually, which we discussed on a previous Cliff Kelly show. It was back in January, if anybody wants to look it up. But we are slowly starting to move towards face-to-face visits. And Dr. Bruner can tell us all about that. But before I go to him, I actually wanted Dr. Stedman to talk about our emergency department first, which has stayed open throughout COVID 24/7.
Oh, great.
So I wanted to start with Dr. Stedman.
Yeah, because I mentioned that Dr. Stedman is an Army veteran, but he has been the Jesse Brown physician since 2015, right? And has formally taken over the reins of the emergency department in 2019. So it sounds like a fast-track kind of fast-moving veteran to me.
Well, I appreciate that. Not certain, but thank you. You know, we all had to sort of dive in head first with COVID. So I don't think it's anything special that we did in the emergency department here. But, you know, not only do we run the main ER, but we also run Fast Track. Right. And then we also opened the COVID tent outside of the actual building itself to try to pull COVID patients or potential COVID patients out of the medical center to avoid any potential infection of staff or other patients. So we're being kept pretty busy.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you're actually compartmentalizing it. So it's those people who need emergent care for other conditions other than getting testing for COVID are seen in a different kind of track. That makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. So we don't have patients potentially infected with COVID sitting in the waiting room mixing with other veterans waiting to be seen for other ailments.
Oh, fantastic. And also, so as you're doing that, you know, it's really that you're returning to normalcy. So explain what that means. So is it that we're still, you know, requiring people to mask? What does returning to normalcy look like?
So, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It's actually a new normal, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the ER is going to continue to run. That actually hasn't changed aside from our big change when COVID arrived. However, you know, everyone in the medical center, both employees and patients, are required to mask up the whole time they're here to prevent any spread. And, you know, we initially shut down all of the clinics and procedures, and they're starting to open those back up. And so, you know, obviously this doesn't affect the ER because we've been open the whole time, but as we're starting to have more and more clinics open up, we're starting to get more and more patients back, which is nice to see.
Oh, great. So, you know, what do you think, you know, what were some of the things that you would advise our veterans to be on the lookout for if they are looking for emergency room care and or just coming in for COVID testing? Do you think there's certain things that they should be looking out for, you know, as far as symptoms, or how do you think they should view this?
Well, sure. First and foremost, I can't stress enough that we can't assume or act as though COVID is done. You know, we had a big surge here in Chicago, and we made it over the hump, and the numbers have backed off significantly, which is great. However, we need to continue wearing our masks every time we're out. We need to continue social distancing as much as possible. However, you know, also during COVID, we had a significant decrease in our emergency room patient population, and this was seen nationwide. It was a very interesting phenomenon. We would normally see heart attacks and strokes and every other type of emergency, and emergency departments across the country just weren't seeing any of those, and it's somewhat disconcerting that all those patients just disappeared. However, now that, like you said, things are starting to get back to somewhat normal, we're starting to see more of these patients again, and I do encourage them definitely to come to the emergency room if there's any concern about an emergent condition. We're here. We're ready to see you. We've set things in place to minimize risk. And as long as you also minimize your risk as much as possible wearing your mask and if not coming to the ER when you're out on your own, just avoiding getting into groups as much as possible, you know, I think we all can safely take care of you.
Yeah, that's a really important point because, you know, most of these cases, it looks like they're asymptomatic. And if someone has chest pain or they have facial drooping or weakness and you know, slurred speech and those kinds of things and different signs of a potential impending stroke, it is better for you to go in, because if you do have an underlying health condition, and especially since a lot of our veterans are older now, they can actually be more at risk for the worst complications of the disease, and even including death. So we've been seeing that there is a higher number of people in the category who have died who actually were older than 50 years old, 65 years old. So that is something that I'm glad you were saying that, because they have to realize that those symptoms are real and you need to seek treatment if those things are happening to you. And so why don't we turn to Dr. Stedman, and I know Dr. Brunner, but I know as the Associate Chief of Staff for Clinical Affairs, you're probably not that busy, right? Especially with COVID-19 going on. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you fit into the picture.
Right. Well, I'm a member of the senior leadership team at the hospital. I've been there for about 12 years.
Yes.
And as Dr. Stedman mentioned, when the pandemic hit us back in March and going into April, we really shifted our planning. I mean, normally we run about 700,000 visits a year in the clinics, and we have a 200-bed hospital. And like all the other hospitals in the state, we stopped doing elective procedures, and we actually shut down the clinics. And basically, we're only taking care of emergencies and hospital patients. And we prepared for the worst case scenario. Fortunately, that's not what happened. But we did prepare for probably a surge twice as big as what we got, thankfully. Yeah. So we got through that. At the peak, we probably had 25 or 30 COVID positive patients in the hospital each day. Now we're last week or two, we've been down to 3 or 4. So as Dr. Stedman said, the number of COVID patients that we're seeing has come down, thankfully. But, of course, we still all need to be vigilant. Now, during that time, we were very concerned, as Dr. Stedman said, that people that had other issues, heart attacks, strokes, trouble breathing, other chronic illnesses, would be staying home and avoiding the hospital. And, you know, we've been really worried about our veterans that we haven't seen. So the most important thing I want to say today is that it is safe to come into the hospital.
Okay.
If you have an emergency, it's safe to come into the emergency room. If you need to come into the clinic, we have our clinics open. We're only going to be operating at about 20-25% of our normal face-to-face volume. That's so we can make it easier for us to keep everybody safe.
Okay.
And and when people do call for their appointments, you know, we give them an option to have it by phone. We have a video connect. But, of course, for some things, you do have to come in person. So especially for those veterans that do have serious conditions, we're really anxious to see them if we haven't seen them for a while and talk to them to make sure they're doing okay. And if they're not doing okay, to, you know, get a plan together for what we're going to do about that.
Yes, yes. And, you know, some of the things that, that you just brought into mind, you know, we have, as I was mentioned before, we have veterans who are span the age range, you know, from young to old. And we actually, one of the things that we were concerned about is this influenza vaccination as well, that we get the yearly flu vaccination so that we can actually get it done a little bit earlier. I'm actually working with the state a bit on that. But, you know, having something done in earlier, like in August, September, you know, this to in case we do have a second pandemic wave in the fall, that we're not bringing people in and crowding up your emergency rooms with people who have the flu every year. We have about 48,000 deaths a year in the country just due to flu. And so it's something that, you know, I'm not sure of how that's set up as far as people getting their regular routine care, the vaccinations, those things, and what the priority is for you right now.
Well, the priority right now is to, you know, take care of the veterans that have the most urgent needs and, you know, encourage them to call us. Our number is 1-888-569-5282. That's the call center. And you can call that number for whatever your needs are. The flu, we haven't, you know, we haven't geared up for the flu vaccines yet, but you bring up an important point. We are concerned. Typically in the winter, we always see a bump in volume from flu, and the last thing we want is to have a crisis with flu and a surge of COVID patients at the same time. So we would encourage everybody to come in. We have a vaccination program. Veterans can come in and get their vaccinations at the hospital, and I would encourage them to do that once that's available.
Okay, very good. And what about the video connect? Is there a certain number they have to call for that, or is that the same number you were giving to get sort of connected to that type of service?
Yeah, they can call the same number. What we're doing is we've been reaching out to veterans, and they call. But at the call center, they will run, when the veteran calls, our staff will go over the options with them. So, you know, sometimes you can do a phone visit. The video connect is nice because, you get a video link. But, a lot of things you can do on the phone. And, now for other things, if they need a procedure, a test, or a certain kind of examination, they might actually have to, come into the hospital. And we've really worked hard along with all the other VAs to set up a protocol, so that we can do that safely. So anyone coming in for a procedure will get tested. And, if it turns out for some reason you're positive, even if you're not symptomatic, we will advise to put that off until after you're better, because you don't want to be in the middle of a procedure while you're in the middle of having an infection. So, the main thing I want to encourage veterans who are on is it is safe to come in. And if you have a problem, please call us or please come in so we can take care of you.
Oh, great.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, yeah, great, great. I've seen the VA actually dramatically improve over the last couple of decades. I had my training over at the University of Illinois, and you've been doing a wonderful job over there, improving the services. So I'm really proud of what the accomplishments that you've been making. And, one of the other areas is the area of psychiatric issues. And the reason why I bring this up is because we're starting to see a lot of, we have veterans who are returning with PTSD, with, psychological, emotional issues, all those. We have people who are homeless. But what about the psychological side of things? Because people are sort of isolated now. And I was thinking about it during the 4th of July with all the fireworks going off in the city and how that was affecting, our veterans. Because we don't have the display of fireworks downtown now. We sort of canceled all of those events. So is there anything you could say about, the psychological outreach to our veterans who, may be feeling kind of isolated right now?
Well, this is a stressful time for everybody, course, if you already, are suffering in one way or another, it can make it worse. So, again, I would just encourage people, if they're not in touch, to call. We will see, for mental health, we have a clinic. For people who walk in, we will see them the same day. Mm-hmm. So you get same-day service, and then we will set you up depending on what the needs are with the appropriate clinic. We did continue, and we are providing mental health services adapt well for the telemedicine. So phone visits, video connect. Yes. Obviously the first time we see somebody, we're going to want to see them face to face. But, once we've met with the person, then there's all those options for follow-up. So, again, I would just encourage people to not be afraid to come into the hospital or to call us. We've had almost no, knock on wood, hospital-acquired infection. So we've been operating very safely. And it's safe to come in, and for anyone who's suffering any symptoms, we definitely want to be there for you.
Fantastic. Yeah, and so on the emergency room side of things, and this is for yourself, Dr. Brunner, and for Dr. Stedman, but on the emergency room side of things, so if someone is contemplating suicide, is really depressed, emotionally upset, do we, push, to get people into that area and make sure that they come through the emergency department?
Yes, I would very much encourage them to come to the emergency department where we're set up to be able to take care of them, and psychiatry is able to come and speak with the person in distress in the ER, so we don't have to shuffle them around.
Okay. Well, okay, we're coming towards the end of the program. I just wanted you to say that number one more time and then give me some last closing thoughts. We have about a minute to go.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Go ahead, Brendan.
So one thing I'd like to point out, so all veterans are aware, Chicago Fire Department does transport to Jesse Brown. There is a specific catchment area sort of limited to Chicago on the north, 31st on the south, Lake Michigan on the east, and Kedzie on the west. But they will transport from outside that catchment area. The veteran just needs to self-identify as a vet. That's all they need to do. It's not looked into any further. And based on the operational resources of the fire department, they might be able to transport the individual to Jesse Brown. So I think that's a great way for someone to be able to get here emergently.
That's excellent to know, yes. I wasn't even aware of that. And the telephone number again, really quick.
I'll give you that. That's 1-888-569-5282. That's our call center. So whether it's a medical issue or a psychological issue or really any kind of even a kind of a social issue for that matter, please call us. And we're here to serve, and we're honored to serve our veterans.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking to all three of you. Have a wonderful rest of the weekend, but thank you for standing up for our veterans and doing the work you do.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation, or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, law.net.
Hey, Cliff, where can a veteran business owner go on the south side of Chicago for breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings?
I'm a veteran, and that's an easy answer. Pearl's Place on 39th and Michigan. Pearl's Place has free parking available across the street. Reasonably priced, quality food that tastes delicious. Veteran owners, there's no place like Pearl's Place.
Hi, I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheVetInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
Governor of Talk Radio, your executive producer wants to know, where can I go for delicious shrimp? Any suggestions?
Absolutely. The one and only veteran business owner, Harris Gulf Shrimp, at 7448 Vincennes. I personally eat there. The price and shrimp are nothing other than fantastic.
Thank you, the one and only Governor of Talk Radio.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, sounds.
Service Women Who Serve is proud to partner with Cliff Kelly and the American Heroes Group as an influencer of social change through advocacy, activism, and examination of legacy for military and veterans. We stand as paradigm-shifting thought leaders, believing social justice is grounded in hope.
Hi,
I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, the game changer in radio, print, and digital media programming. We are a roundtable talk show where information, resources, and referrals are provided intentionally every Saturday to empower our military population on WVON 1690 AM, the iHeart Radio app from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please visit our website at www.americashg.org.
Okay, welcome back to America's Heroes Group Radio Talk Show. We are here on Saturday, July 11th, 2020, and we're here with the American Heroes Group Roundtable with partner Chicago Regional Office Veterans Benefits Administration. The panelists who we'll be talking to today are Adam Swant, Veteran Service Center Manager, and Jeff Huegel, who is the U.S. Army Medic Veteran and Decision Review Officer. What we'll be talking about today is appeals, so they're going to be giving us the rundown on appeals and making sure we understand what we're supposed to be doing as veterans. So very, very good. So welcome, Adam. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you for having me.
Oh, good. Excellent. So let's see. Who wants to swing first, Adam or Jeff?
Yeah, so this is Adam. So okay. I'm going to actually defer to Jeff for most of it because Jeff, as he was introduced, the decision review officer. So he's one of our best subject matter experts who's actually working to resolve our appeals. So he's okay. The expert. So I'm gonna let him talk.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you, Adam, and thank you for bragging me up. just to give a little historical background, prior to the Appeals Modernization Act, which was signed into law in August of 2017, VA processed appeals. It would always start off with a decision that was made. If the veteran disagreed with the decision that was made, he or she would file what was called a notice of disagreement, and that would initiate the appellate process. From there, the case was reviewed. If the benefit could be granted, the benefit was granted, and that resolved the appeal. On the other hand, if the disagreement could not be resolved to the veteran's satisfaction, what would happen would be a statement of the case would be issued. Okay. From there, the veteran would appeal that statement of the case to the Board of Veterans Appeals. Now, those cases are currently being processed in what we call the legacy system because, again, those were appeals that were prior to the adoption of the Appeals Modernization Act.
Okay, yes. And how does the Appeals Modernization Act affect the appeal process now? How's it different?
The Appeals Modernization Act gives the veteran more choices as to how he or she wishes to proceed in resolving their disagreement. As I mentioned with the legacy appeals, it always followed a predictable pathway. Again, a notice of disagreement was filed. If the appeal couldn't be granted, it would eventually end up at the Board of Veterans Appeals. Now, the veteran has, with any decision rendered after February 19th, 2019, and I can't stress that date enough, February 19th, 2019 was the date that the Appeals Modernization Act went live. Any decision rendered on or after that date allows the veteran to follow one of three different pathways. Okay. The first pathway, if the veteran disagreed with the decision, he or she could submit what's called a supplemental claim. Okay. A supplemental claim is where the veteran may have new and relevant evidence which may change the outcome of the previous decision. Mm-hmm. And the veteran has the opportunity to file a supplemental claim within 1 year of the decision with which they disagreed.
Okay.
A second pathway would be the higher level review. This is a situation where the veteran believes an error was made on the part of the VA, whether that's to deny service connection or whether that's
in regards to an evaluation that was assigned or an effective date for an evaluation that was assigned. The higher level review is a situation where it's called a closed record. There's no opportunity to submit additional evidence, but if you elect a higher level review, the evidence is reviewed. The previous evidence, which was used in the previous decision, is reviewed again. And if the decision review officer can arrive at a different decision, they have the authority to make that change.
Okay, I see.
So that is the second pathway, again, called the higher level review.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third option is to appeal directly to the Board of Veterans' Appeals. Again, one of the big differences between the Appeals Modernization Act and what we call the legacy system is in the legacy system, you didn't have the opportunity to take your case directly to the Board of Veterans' Appeals and have it decided by a veterans law judge. Now, with the AMA, you have that opportunity. With an appeal directly to the Board of Veterans' Appeals, you can opt for a closed record where the veterans law judge reviews the case and renders a new decision. You can opt for a hearing with the veterans law judge, and again, based upon that hearing, they may remand the case back to the regional office for further development, or they could make a decision. And they also accept new and relevant evidence as well, so to be considered again in the BVA decision. So those are the three pathways that are now available to you as an individual who disagrees with a VA decision, a benefits decision.
Okay, so maybe you can sort of elucidate that a little bit more about the timing of the appeals process. So if you made a claim, let's say, back in 2005 or 2007, earlier on in, let's say, 2003, if you made a claim at that point, you are still within the legacy system, correct? Or
Well, if you filed your initial claim back in 2003 or 2005 or 2007, only if you are still, if that issue is still pending, you would have a what's considered a legacy appeal.
Okay.
Now, you do have the opportunity to opt out of the legacy pathway and into the Appeals Modernization Act. But that's only if you receive a supplemental statement of the case or a statement of the case. We give you the option within 60 days to opt into one of those three pathways, again, that I mentioned, the supplemental claim, the higher level review, or the appeal directly to the board. In the situation you're speaking of, if the claim was initially filed that many years ago, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it's kind of unlikely that the case would still be pending unless it is a rather old appeal in the legacy system.
Yes, yeah, that makes sense, yeah. So what do people need to do, know about, getting the correct paperwork together, making sure that they, go for the appropriate medical evaluations, those kinds of things, in order to support their appeal?
Okay. Like I said, under the AMA, any decision rendered on or after February 19th of 2019, an attachment is sent out with the notification letter. It's called a VA Form 20-0998, and that form is entitled Your Rights to Seek Further Review of Our Decision. And it's a very well-written form, in my opinion. As a veteran myself, I read through this, and it's very well-written as far as how the veteran needs to proceed if he or she disagrees with any aspect of a decision that's rendered. Again, I mentioned it talks directly about the supplemental claim, the higher level review, and the appeal to the board. And on the second page of that document, it does tell them which forms they need to fill out if they wish to pursue one of those three pathways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe you can give us the call number, for people to call in, or how they get in touch with, the appeals process system. Is there a way they can get contact this or learn more information about it? And I'm going to ask you, I'm going to have you do it, say it now so we can repeat it later on, too, so you still have a little bit more time.
I know the VA does have this on their website as far as va.gov.
Okay.
For the appeals and specifically for the Veterans Benefits Administration. I would like to point out the names of the forms, if that would be of help.
Oh, yes.
To individuals. Yes. And again, this is documented on that form that's sent out with every decision that the VA makes.
Okay.
But if you wish to pursue a supplemental claim, the VA form to utilize is the VA form 20-0995.
Okay.
If an individual wished to opt for a higher level review, they would utilize VA form 20-0996.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they wished to appeal their disagreement directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals in Washington, they would utilize VA form 10182.
Okay.
And again, each of these forms has the instructions as far as what they need to do as far as how to fill it out. They have to specify which issues they disagreed with. They have to identify the date of the decision so that VA can identify the decision quickly with which they disagreed and how to best proceed with that.
Okay. And what about for our veterans who have disabilities? Is there anything, those who are, who've come back from combat who, have had, traumatic brain injuries or, have lost limbs, those kinds of things. Anything that you would recommend for them? Because sometimes it's hard for them, to focus and figure out how to get some things done. But is there anything that you have for them as far as looking at the appeals process?
Well, I mean, if they have any questions, they can certainly call us at the VA toll-free number. That would be one possible avenue, and that number is 1-800-827-1000, so 800-827-1000.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I would strongly suggest if they are having issues and they don't have someone like a trusted family member or a trusted friend to advise or assist them in filling out any of these forms and initiating the appellate process, if they would have a representative. They could have an attorney represent them. They could have one of many veteran service officers represent them.
Okay.
And provide advice as to how to proceed, because it is a big decision as far as, if they disagree with the decision that the VA renders, which pathway is best for them specifically, because sometimes the supplemental claim might be the best path to go down. The higher level review path could be best, and sometimes an appeal directly to the board is more appropriate.
Oh, see, yes. So that's something that they could actually discuss with them and make sure that they're going down the right path.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And just like always, they have 1 year from the date of the VA's decision to either go with the supplemental claim, the higher level review, or the appeal directly to the board. So it's not like they have to make a decision immediately. They've got a little time to think it over as to which pathway they would wish to proceed in.
Okay. Very good. And one other thing is, with the COVID going on, it seems like I can't even go and get a slice of pizza without thinking about COVID these days.
Right.
So how does that affect the operations you have going now for the appeals process? And is there any effect right now?
Well, as of right now, any appeals that require examinations, are pretty much on hold. And we're kind of in a holding pattern as far as that's concerned, especially examinations which require in-person examinations. For example, a knee, just as an example, a knee examination requires range of motion studies, and that's not something that you can really do over a Skype exam.
Right.
You definitely have to have an examiner in person to measure the knee's range of motion and things of that nature, crepitus and x-rays for arthritis. Those are things that pretty much have to be done in person. And
yes.
Again, with COVID, those are basically in a holding pattern at this point. Once the VA is assured that it's safe to proceed, then we would be doing more of those in-person examinations. On the other hand, if an appeal simply required, let's say, a medical opinion, for example, there's a question as to whether one disability, like the right knee, might be secondary to the left knee, which is service-connected already. That might be something which could be resolved, and an examination review could be done without an in-person exam. So these are all, it's definitely a case-by-case basis, but in general, any examination that's required that requires an in-person exam is really in a holding pattern at this time.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, maybe you can, any success stories you can talk about with our veterans, because I know that the VA does a great job if you go and work with them and make sure that, you are, presenting yourself and you actually, comply with the paperwork things. But anything that that stands out to you that makes you proud, because I know as a veteran you served and, just as a medic as well, because I saw your front lines looking at those kinds of issues. Is anything that you, stands out to you? Or?
Well, I mean, as we always say, we do everything we can to grant the benefit that's sought by the veteran. It's only when we can't find a pathway to benefit entitlement that we must deny a claim. So as a disabled veteran myself, I'm looking for any opportunity to make a positive impact in the veterans that I serve. I've had some successes. None that really jump to mind at this particular moment, but we do our very best to provide proper and just decisions to the appellants that we serve.
Yes, yeah. Because actually I was in the Army National Guard, and I did a couple of tours in Iraq, but I remember I was a state surgeon, actually, for the Army National Guard, and Tammy Duckworth, when she had her helicopter incident, I remember after that coming back, and actually when they opened that highway, the Veterans Highway, I actually went across it with her and then gave her one of my flags that I had when I was over in Iraq. And she just broke down crying because she said she had lost her flag in the helicopter, when she went down.
Sure.
And what she had to go through, what a tremendous spirit. So we have to remember that even our veterans who, have disabilities are stellar components of our society still and still serve despite those things that have happened to them. But it should be recognized when those things happen. Happen to them, and they get the support they need, to get through it. But I'm really extremely excited that you're there, working on behalf of our veterans. But is any other topics that you'd like to talk about surrounding what you see at the VA and some of the things that you think we need to know about within the VA and how our veterans are being taken care of?
Well, first, let me say thank you for your service. I was not aware that you were involved specifically with Ms. Duckworth, but again, as you pointed out, we have lots of veterans that are making very, very valuable contributions, whether they are serving in the federal service. There's many, many fellow veterans who served in all different branches that I work with at the VA, and there's just a special call to serve that I think is just an extension of our veterans' service, regardless of the branch that they were in. And that has continued on for many of us at the Chicago VA regional office specifically, but nationally as a whole. Without knowing every detail about that, I know that there's a lot of veterans who serve in the VA, both the hospitals, the Veterans Benefits Administration, and the Veterans Cemeteries. Mm-hmm. So, it's I would imagine that for many, the call to serve their country the first time around in one of the branches of the military is a strong guiding factor in leading them to pursue service in another branch of government after their discharge from the military.
Yes.
And again, I just am very proud to serve my country. Was proud to do it in the Army, and when I got out of the Army, I applied and got into the VA and have been there since 2001, and it's
2001.
Still a great job.
That's incredible.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yes. So, it's a great job. It's an opportunity to continue to serve in a different capacity, but, again, an opportunity to serve men and women who have earned their benefits, both physical disabilities and the hidden disabilities in terms of mental and emotional disabilities that are a result of their service. And again, like I said before, any opportunity I have to grant the benefits that the veterans are seeking, I do so happily.
Yeah, because I realized that you were also the recipient of the 2018 Disabled American Veterans and Illinois VA Employee of the Year for your work with the disabled veterans. So sounds like you are one of my favorite stellar kind of people from military service. thank you so much for your service.
Thank you, thank you. I can't thank the DAV for honoring me with that award.
Yeah.
You know, it's I'm very proud of that.
Yes.
I think
yes.
That's, you know, just based on the work that I try to do every day and the attitude that I bring to the job. It's nice to be recognized for doing that kind of work and you know, bringing that positive attitude to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just doing what I can. One case at a time, one person at a time. And, for many of us, for all of us at the VA, they're not claims numbers. They're not numbers in line. They're real people. Every person, every case that you pick up, you touch a life. And I don't take that for granted. I don't take that lightly.
Yes.
I realize I have an opportunity to impact every veteran that I come across, whether I speak to them in person or not, or even on the phone, even if I never make contact with them. My review of their case is an opportunity to impact them, their family members, and everyone that they know. So, you know, I take pride in trying to do it right every time.
Yeah. You know, I was brought to tears. I remember in the past I had a, a veteran who was down in southern Illinois, but he was a farmer who actually had lost both of his legs and his right arm in a vehicle explosion, and his wife was working like three jobs trying to take care of him, and I read this story, and I mean, I was just weeping, and we just need to do something to make sure that our veterans are taken care of, and I'm so glad you were there to take care of them. But we're at the last minute, so what I want to do is just mention what you want to as far as a closing remark, and then maybe you can give that veterans number again, telephone number, and
sure.
You gave us a wonderful explanation of appeal, so thank you.
Well, thank you, and again, just to reiterate, any decision that's rendered by the VA after February 19th of 2019, you will receive with that a statement or a form which clarifies which of the three pathways you as a veteran who has a disagreement can choose in order to have that disagreement addressed. And again, I'll just touch upon them: supplemental claim pathway, the higher level review pathway, or the appeal directly to the board. I can't emphasize enough to read through that document, that two-page document, so that you understand what your rights are and what your pathways are to have your decision reviewed. And again, as requested, that number to contact the VA is 1-800-827-1000.
Great.
800-827-1000.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Adam and Jeff. You have really served our nation well and are continuing to help our veterans. So we're very proud of your service. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.